I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Going back to school after a long summer is tough for many students, but even more difficult for those moving from middle school to high school. School buildings change, attitudes change, and the transition from adolescence to young adulthood begins. Every parent goes through it eventually, and believe me, it's not a trip you want to go through without some good advice. Today, psychologist Wes Crenshaw is back to give us some ideas on how to make the transition easier and offers some advice to make relationships between parents and their children a bit stronger. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. In the Kraske household, our oldest is about to become a big, bad high school senior. Our youngest won't be as big or bad as he begins his first year in high school. Yes, Michael Kraske will be a freshman, and he'll be navigating a transition that's known for its high degree of difficulty. It's a new school, new classmates, new teachers, and the transition from adolescence to adulthood will be fully underway. Back with us again to offer us some good advice on how to make all kinds of transitions easier this fall is psychologist Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He has served families in Lawrence and surrounding areas since 1999 and owns Family Psychological Services. He's author of Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Teens and Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. And Wes, always good to have you.
And it's always good to be here. It sounds like you have a lot on your agenda for the next school year.
Transition time in the Kraske household. But we're talking about middle school to high school, but you've also, I've heard you say that the toughest transition really is from elementary school to middle school. Why is that?
It is. The cultural shift between ninth grade and 10th grade is not as radical as the change from 5th grade to 6th grade. Plus, if you
ask— Or 6th to 7th in my kid's case.
Oh, yeah. So they go up at 7th. Yeah, it's different in different communities.
Sure it is. Yeah.
But the change is nonetheless a big one at that point. And for a lot of kids going into high school, it's sort of like, you know, they feel saved. They feel like, I've made it through middle school. Thank you. I can move on now. But for kids in elementary school, there is a sense of grief and loss and some trepidation. Because middle school is so different.
But why is middle school so tough? Because if nothing else, it has such a terrible reputation. Even middle schools who probably do a pretty good job, like Indian Hills where my kids went, but it has such a tough rap attached
well,
to it.
Let me preface, since you bring it up, let me preface it by saying one of the questions I often ask adults, and I mean adults in our age range, the, let's say, over 30 crowd, is when they're having struggles in relationships, whether they're romantic relationships or friendships or at work, I ask them, how were your junior high years? Nobody looks at me and says, why do you care about that? They instantly are like, oh, it was so awful. How did you know? You know?
Yeah.
And this has a huge impact on us as adults, or those years are really critical. So what's different about middle school for the grade school student coming in? For beginners, it has a lot less supervision. We don't think about this until you have to actually sit down and analyze these kind of things. But when you're in sixth grade or fifth grade, you're in a self-contained classroom usually. If there's any movement, it's just to go out to art and special things that you do, recess, whatever. But when you're in middle school, you're transitioning around. You have a locker, and I don't know where you were at in this with your son when he was in middle school. But one of the most terrifying things is figuring out how to get between classes to the locker and make that stupid combination work.
I can't tell you how much trepidation there was in my household over exactly what you just said. I remembered. I think he tried that combination 144 times before the first day of school.
Good, because that's what I would recommend. So many people don't realize, and kids haven't been there, so they don't know, that this is going to be the thing that brings you into a sobbing mess into the the hallway when you're trying to get to class, and you've got to figure out how to go to the bathroom during that time. People don't realize how difficult all those things are to put together in a 4-minute passing period. Plus, you're out there in a social environment that is, in many schools, minimally supervised. And so you begin to see more mean kid behaviors, as we've discussed, more hotspots, bullying, et cetera. So all of those things kids worry about as they're going into this new, really different environment.
Well, one thing you can do is practice, right? You can go – in fact, right now, schools are open again, and you can walk the halls and try that combination 144 times to see if you can get it down.
Yeah. It is critical, really, that parents with new middle schoolers head out this week and walk those halls and figure out how many paces it is to the bathroom from the locker, see where all the classes are. And it's interesting. Some kids do not want to do this. It sounds super boring. You know, I don't want to see that school any sooner than I have to. But really, it is a desensitization training. It makes it feel safer when you're really there. It's more familiar. And you know all those things. And for heaven's sakes, work that combination. And one little hint, if you do not have lockers with the built-in lock, study carefully what lock you buy, because some are infinitely easier to operate than others. The turning ones are hard. The little lever ones are much easier. And in the mad dash, it's easier to work those levers.
Well, what else would you recommend for parents of kids, again, transitioning from elementary to middle schools? What else can parents do to sort of help them get ready?
As we always talk about, parents have to begin by really having built a good conversation with their kids. If you don't know what's going on in the school via your child, if they aren't talking with you a little every day about it, you're not going to know how they're dealing. And some kids respond to the stress by shutting down. And you also have to keep in mind that thing I always say is, do not fall victim to the myth that you're done parenting at 13 or 14. If anything, this is when it gets serious, or as we say on Twitter, it gets real. At 14 and 13, this is when the parent becomes very important. And research tells us that young adults look more like their parents in their values and emotional composition and how they behave than they look like their peer group in the teenage years. So don't succumb to the myth of peer pressure. Parents are the primary influence.
You know, Wes, you talk about this idea of kids coming home and shutting down and not wanting to share. And in my mind, I automatically revert to thinking of boys who come home and don't want to talk as much, because that seems, at least in my world, to be more often the case. So what can a parent do to open up those channels of communication and sort of begin a dialogue that hopefully extends a while and gives parents some insight into what's going on inside the minds of their kids?
There's lots of little things you can do. You know, as we've said before, start early. But if you haven't started early or things begin to drop off despite your best efforts, try and do those conversations in what I would refer to as the naturally occurring environment. Now, that's going to vary depending on who you are and what you do. If your kids, they play sports, maybe you're throwing the baseball back and forth and talking a little bit. That baseball thing is kind of hypnotic. It'll get people into conversation. Shooting baskets. If you are, people who like to go to museums, go do that while you're there. Walk around, talk about different things. Let it come naturally.
That's really important. That's worked in my experience as well. You have to just sort of ease into it, as opposed to sitting down and saying, talk to me.
Now we are going to discuss your day.
Yeah. And
let's discuss it for 10 minutes. And you turn on the timer.
And then I have some other things to do. Yeah. Anything else that might come to mind in terms of helping parents prepare their kids?
Well, I think the more a parent can show empathy for the child's struggle, the better off they're going to be. Kids respond best to empathy. If the parent, and it's tricky because it's different than sympathy. If you're like crying over your child's school day. The child is going to want to protect the parent from mm-hmm. such a horrible pain. Mm-hmm. So sympathy is not the same thing as empathy. Empathy is showing that you understand that it's difficult. And so
even say when I was a kid, here's what I went through in seventh grade.
Yeah. And my wife is the smartest person on the face of the earth. And thankfully, she's not listening, because when I get home, then she would demand more of me. But the other day, we were doing some remodeling in my office, and I screwed up twice the oak trim for the windows. And I was so upset. And my wife was so empathic about this, that she did not say to me, "Oh, honey, the color is okay. Don't worry about it." I would have just gone off like a shot. She just sat quietly, which is not her normal thing to do, and let me stew. And finally, at the end of the day, she said, "Well, you know, we got a lot accomplished." That is perfect empathy. And so when you see your child having a really hard struggle with something like that, resist the urge to rescue. Mm-hmm. Just talk with them. Say, "Yeah, that must have been difficult. That new teacher, you know, didn't give you a clear assignment." You know, I always frustrated me when I was in junior high.
Yeah. Let's get our listeners involved here as we talk about transitions as kids get ready to move from elementary to middle school to high school. If you're the parent of a kid going through one of these transitions from elementary school to middle school or middle school to high school, have you gone through these experiences and share some good advice with other listeners that you gave your kids as they made these transitions? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at updatedate@kcur.org. You can also join our discussion online on KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. You were talking a little bit ago, Wes, about middle schools and even, you know, 30 years later, parents looking back and groaning over those years. Why are those schools such dens of iniquity for so many people? And why isn't the education community sort of doing a better job with the whole middle school concept, if indeed there is a problem there, which I gather there is?
Let's schedule a week worth of sessions of shows to talk about that, because it is such a good question and so complicated. Here's the super short version. Kids are at talk about a transitional point. Kids are moving from childhood into adolescence, and so they have a tremendous increase in what they see as possible in how they work with others. And some of that is good and some of it's bad. And they also do not have much regulation of that. So they don't yet have the filters to stop themselves from doing some of the things that they will be able to do in later adolescence and adulthood. Mm-hmm. So they're just sort of unguided missiles mm-hmm. by their own brain at this point. And one of the mistakes we make, and this is of some controversy, but the literature generally suggests right now we really ought to keep them in elementary school till eighth grade and treat them like elementary students. And instead, since the 50s, we had this thing called junior high,
right,
which is exactly what it sounds like. We're going to make you little high schoolers. Mm-hmm. This was not our best choice. And we backed off some of that to middle school and recognized developmentally that these kids are neither fish nor fowl. They're kind of just a mess. My wife teaches middle school, and she's often said the best thing we can do is just help them process their relationships for a couple of years and try to teach them a little science here and there. Mm-hmm. But it is a developmental mess for young people.
It's a cesspool.
Well,
of all this cauldron of
that's
hormones.
That's a visual image,
else.
Isn't it? But yeah, it is a real mess for everybody, and trying to just keep them on some kind of target is tricky. They're socially, academically, et cetera, just for developmental reasons.
How are you helping your child prepare for the transition from elementary to middle school or middle school to high school? That's our topic today. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org, or tweet us at @kcurupToDate. Well, what should the education community, Wes, be doing to make for better middle schools? And what needs to happen out there that's not happening?
Well, nowhere is there a more consistent set of changes than in middle school for schools. High schools don't change nearly as much. At this stage in the game, elementary schools don't change nearly as much. But middle schools just continually are trying new things. And, you know, some schools try more departmentalization. Some are, you know, the true middle school model involves a team approach where you try to do an integrative teaching model and bring language arts into science and science into math and math into language arts and have everybody sort of collaborating. Well, that is more complicated even than it sounds. So schools are still experimenting. And I'll tell you, my opinion is the very worst decision we make at the pinnacle of the list of bad choices we make in transitioning kids to middle school is giving up recess. That doesn't seem like a big deal. But you talk about a bunch of kids who need twice a day to go outside and just run like crazy people around and climb on things and, you know, do that in a somewhat supervised environment. You're describing seventh and eighth graders.
Well, so when you talk to school administrators about just that, what do they say? I mean, that seems like a pretty simple fix.
No child left behind. And admittedly, we're moving out of that era. But they say teach to the test. They say we have to meet standards of excellence. And I understand that. I have empathy for that. But even in the elementary school, Steve, they're cutting back on recess to meet all of those demands. And I know no one in the medical professions, in psychology, in child development, who thinks that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But that's what people are faced with, reduced time schedules because of budget cuts. So they're going to squeeze in every minute to try to get their standards up and meet those criteria that are still hanging around.
That's interesting. Beth writes us this email: can't the school groom students, student government, athletes, club presidents to have a meet and greet with new students, which might be a good idea too?
It is. And one of the programs that is known to do that, and I can't say I know where this came from, but it's Link. It's a Link program. And we do that in Lawrence. I know they do it in Johnson County.
And we do it at Shawnee Mission East. My son's involved with that. Yeah.
And this takes kind of the some of the best students of the high school, but most socially adroit ones that aren't in any bad flow of bullying or being kind to students. In fact, the opposite, and puts them in a mentoring role with incoming students. And I strongly endorse that approach. I don't know, and I'd be interested if callers knew, whether middle schools have adapted that formula and use some of their mature eighth graders to support sixth graders. But I would say that would be a great extension.
That'd be a really good idea, wouldn't
it?
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Let's go to Roger from Overland Park. Roger, you're on with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Hello. One thing I was interested in, doctor's comment about kids being an unguided missile. I felt for a long time that we cocoon our children for the first 16 years of our life, Then we hand them the keys to a 3,000-pound battering ram and a cell phone and tell them to have a nice life. So our approach was to deliberately expose our daughter to managed risk. And the way we did it, and it, no, you don't have to do it the same way, we did it with scuba diving. If you make about five very specific mistakes in a row when you're underwater, you can die, and it's very apparent. But that's easily managed. It's an activity you do as a family, and you make darn sure that you don't make those five mistakes in a row.
Yeah, and it's very, very smart, very, very smart. And
now, you don't have to do something as expensive as scuba diving, rock climbing, any, because, you know, kids used to grow up on a farm, and there was plenty of risk.
Yes. I grew up in western Kansas. I know what you're talking about. You are so on the money, and here is the problem that people are into in our culture right now is the bubble wrap situation that you were talking about, where we want to have a zero-risk environment for kids. Well, okay, intuitively, that just sounds like a great idea. We don't want to drop our kids off a balcony and have some terrible you know, injury come to them. But at the same time, part of learning is learning about risk and risk management. This is why you're so on the money. And if kids do not learn about risk and risk management, then they go out and act risky because they do not think by their brain definitions, their brain chemistry, they don't think about consequence. They don't think, you know, remember in logic in college, if P, then Q, that is not where they're at yet. They don't think about the cue for whatever P they have going on. And you're suggesting that a person go through an actual learning process as a child or young teen where they build that if P then Q, I probably better not go through those five steps or I'm going to be in trouble. That's a great idea, and you're right, it doesn't have to be scuba diving. It could be anything. Right now we're just too interested in having our kids' entire risk be playing Xbox and hoping not to be killed by whomever.
Roger, thanks for the good call. I appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Xavier from Independence, who writes us this. These divisions and transitions in our educational system always seem contrived and cruel. In elementary school, you spend 6 years climbing to the top of the heap, only to be pulled back down to the bottom in seventh grade. You then spend 3 years climbing back to the top of the heap again, only to be pulled down to the bottom again in high school. How does this make any sense, Xavier asks. Why isn't there a smooth progression from grades 1 to 12?
Yeah, this is a very fine point. Let me throw in several models that address what Xavier is bringing up.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, as I said, the K through 8, it really kind of addresses that problem because they're all in the same building. Now, buildings weren't built for that, and that's why we don't see it happening more, but the research tells us that's the best way to go. The second model that really works in terms of redistributing how kids go to their attendance centers is the 9, 10, 11, 12 being in separate buildings. Now, you may say, well, you're doing the same thing in a two-year rotation. You're actually not, because kids then matriculate together.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody matriculates together, then the social hierarchy and the friendship circles remain essentially the same.
You're saying separating 9th and 10th from 11th and 12th.
Exactly. So you would have – so just making up a local example, you'd have Shawnee Mission East be the 11-12 and what's now – North.
Shawnee Mission North, yeah.
You're right, be the 9-10. And so that way kids all go together. And for the sports nuts, that helps your sports teams because you have a larger pool of age mates to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of good things about that, and they do it up and around Chicago quite a bit.
You don't see the educational community moving very quickly in new directions here, do you?
No, because it's hard. We just moved. Lawrence was the last school, I think, in the Midwest to move, or maybe in the nation, to move kids out of junior high, ninth graders out of junior high into high school. And it was a very difficult transition. It got put off about 20 years, and then it kind of dropped kaboom. And it was very, very difficult and frustrating for everybody involved. So people are kind of scared of that because things look good on paper until you have to execute them.
Yeah.
So a lot of folks making those kind of changes is really difficult.
Dr. Wes Crenshaw will be appearing this Thursday at 6:30 at the Kansas City Library on the Plaza. That's at 4801 Main Street. There's a 6 p.m. reception preceding the event. More information at kcur.org if you want to see Wes in person or perhaps consult with him about situations in your family. Again, our number 816-235-2888. Susie from Blue Springs, good morning. Are you there, Susie? Okay. What about, we've talked a little bit about the transition from elementary to middle school. What about middle school to high school? You were saying it's not as tough for a whole lot of reasons, which I guess surprised me a little bit.
Well, the theory of junior high originally was that it did exactly that. It acclimated you to the high school environment, and to some degree for middle school, that's true too. Now, I don't want to make it sound like there's no stressful transition into high school, because as Xavier said, right on the money, there's this sudden movement from I am an eighth grader and I'm the king of the mountain and now I'm a lowly, wiggly worm freshman. Mm-hmm. I'm nothing. And that is, I think that's quite painful. I think for a lot of kids, it's very difficult to acclimate to. Kids worry a lot about hazing.
Mm-hmm.
And schools militate against that because there's another word for hazing, and it's, you know, bullying. It's kind of institutionalized bullying. But hazing continues to go on in either a overt or covert form. There are different expectations. Everything from ninth grade on is going to count toward your college options. And I know ninth graders who are already kind of terrified about that.
Mm-hmm.
They see maybe a big brother, sister, cousin, uncle out of work. and with a college degree, and kids pick up on their environment and get scared about that. So going into high school can seem like something you'd just really rather avoid and stay home with Xboxes.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. We'll talk about how he feels that the peer group is not the most influential factor in students making the transition from middle school to high school. We'll talk about what is the most influential factor. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's Religion Roundtable discussion on Missouri Amendment No. 2, the so-called right to pray ballot question, you'll find it at kcur.org. And a reminder, polls are open today from 7 until 7 o'clock today in both Kansas and Missouri. Tomorrow we'll provide analysis of today's election and make some predictions for November as our political pundits return. This hour we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He works in Lawrence. He served families over there since 1999. He's author of Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Teens. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can send us an email at uptodate@kcur.org. We have an email here from Brooke West, and she writes, I'd like to keep in mind that every school year for our students would be just like if we as adults had to get a new job, a grade, with a new manager, teacher, with all new coworkers, peers, in a new office, a classroom every August after we had almost 3 months of summer vacation. Be patient with your students and prepare them for success. Get them to bed early starting now, nutritious food, and start back writing and reading if they have taken a summer break. Probably a good idea.
Yep, great advice right down the line. The I would even add it's also a new owner, the principal, and a new set of regulations and guidelines that are more difficult by definition than what you've had to do before. You get you realize the term to be petered out comes from the Peter principle, and you're elevated to your own level of incompetence. Mm. And that's really what school is about. Every time you succeed at something, they stick you into something harder. Mm-hmm. And kids do feel kind of petered out, but especially that's what senioritis is about. She also points out some really good, and I was going to mention them, and I'll just do it now, some very good transitional strategies for all kids getting back to school. In the next couple of weeks, trying to back off of the late nights that kids enjoy in the summer and turning down the screen time an hour. The research is just as clear as can be. An hour before bedtime, computers and cell phones and all the things we love dearly need to be off. And that's partly because of the light they put out and partly because of the way they stimulate your brain.
No computers. That's interesting. Yeah. No cell phones, no nothing. An hour before bedtime, eh?
Yeah. And you can ease into that in the next couple of weeks, but the end goal needs to be that. I think this is a good time of the year, stodgy old guy that I may seem to be. This is the great time of the year to go do a couple of indoor, well air conditioned cultural activities, like hit the Nelson Atkins. And I will give prizes to my kids, money. If they can find certain things that are like a scavenger hunt.
Really?
Like if we go to the History Museum and everything they can find about Lincoln or every form of communication they can find, they make money. And that incentivizes this. And it also gets you back in a little bit of an academic frame of mind, and still it's kind of fun. And it's 72 degrees in there, which is a bonus.
So it's time to ease back on bedtimes earlier, get them up a little bit earlier, get the clock sort of wound up here a little bit.
Get them on a regular, just like the caller said, on a regular eating schedule, just beginning to think more like school, particularly that last week before.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Lyle from Grain Valley. Lyle, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Well, thank you for answering my phone call. I started the middle school program. We transitioned in Raytown from a junior high program to a middle school program.
What year was that, by the way?
Oh, gosh. Two many. Taught for 34 years ago. Okay. So it was, I suppose...
early adopters there.
Early 80s. But now one thing that happened, my wife and I taught together, and she went to the high school because they didn't have anybody that was there that had ninth graders.
Right.
And now they're moving ninth graders up. But they sent our principal, Norm Brooks. He had people go all over the country to find what schools were doing the middle school the best. Well, what we did was we brought the sixth graders up, but we kept them separate. We had three floors. One floor with a sixth grade, one a seventh, and one a eighth. They didn't mix, so they didn't get bullied. We had two planning periods. One was a team planning period that you could do birthdays on. Okay, who's having a birthday? Also, who's having problems? Such and such is not doing well. Are the rest of you seeing that? We'd schedule parent meetings during that team planning period so we all could meet and talk. Then we had our individual subject planning period. We also had a 20-minute zero hour to begin the day, and it was kind of a homeroom time, but you did housekeeping, but you also did self-awareness activities to kind of build kids up, and it worked wonderful. I'm afraid a lot of it is, oh, we did the same thing you were talking about. We would try to incorporate other activities. We would use a lot of math, of course, in science, but English would use math, or they'd have something that dealt with math. And every time we had a test, every teacher would tell those kids at seventh period, remember, you've got a science test coming up, or you've got a English test coming up. So they constantly we really worked together. I didn't think my teaching was never as effective when I was on that. And, of course, budget cuts came, and they dropped the extra planning period. I don't know what it is now. I retired in 2000.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of really good transitional formulas in there, and studying the other schools, figuring out what worked for them,
right.
Adapting that to yours. The collaborative part of it is also very valuable, and you beat me to asking whether it had survived, because now it's like a factory. Yeah, that's probably a little mean. It has a factory-like nature sometimes, that it must be very efficient. It must produce this No Child Left Behind product.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of this, like this idea of having the self-awareness in the morning, getting people started on the right foot, this is just intuitively a good idea. You guys knew this. And what we do now with Zero Hour, at least in high schools, is have another class. And the research is very clear. This is not when the teen brain is at its optimal functioning.
No.
But a 7 o'clock class for high schoolers is a common thing now.
Yeah, we had two times a year we had club activities at a zero hour. And there were all kinds of things. And it really was fun for the kids. But I just hope that they can move back to something like this. Blue Springs did an interesting thing. They still do it. They have a ninth grade center for the middle school kids. When they go to ninth grade, all go to one school. So you have both sides of the district meeting. And it sounds like putting all the roosters in the county in one chicken coop, but it worked.
That was the other thing I was going to respond to. I'd forgotten until you just mentioned it again. The word segregation obviously means something different historically, but to segregate, to keep the grades separate, is actually a good tool. And particularly with middle schools, there are a few of them who include fifth graders just because of the way the buildings are designed. Mm-hmm. They are always in their own wing. And sixth graders, the perfectly designed middle school has everybody in their own wing, and they have roughly separate lunches and do not overlap a whole lot. And that really works better for the reasons this caller, as a principal, described. Now, I do want to say that doesn't eliminate bullying at all, because, of course, people are bullying their peers.
Mm-hmm.
But it sure does cut down on the cross-grade bullying, in which eighth graders, if you haven't noticed, are dramatically bigger than seventh graders. There's a huge growth spurt there. And so that does reduce some of the hot spots between grades that maybe we saw in junior high.
Lyle, thank you for the good phone call. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about transitions from elementary school to middle school to high school, all these transitions that will be taking place in the next few weeks here in our listening area. You know, one thing I've always struggled with, Wes, when it comes to the high school particularly, is the starting time. Yeah. It starts so early in the morning, and that's not the optimal time for learning when it comes to the high school kids and high school brains. And yet you hear that you can't really shift it backwards because of scheduling for after-school sports and everything else. Boy, it's always struck me as just almost too much.
There are high schools. I had one on my Facebook page the other day, a link to this school, and complimented them that they're going to be starting, I think, at 9:30 or 9:45. That is it's just neurology, simple neuroscience. That kids' brains are on a later circadian rhythm than adult brains, and that begins to change in when their brain finishes developing in their mid-20s. And we instead are operating them on not only an adult time but a darn early one to be having a 0 hour and start somebody up at 7 in the morning. And it is clear from the research that high schools that start later will have better attendance, better grade point averages, and a higher graduation rate.
How do they work that with after-school sports? Do you have any insights into that, or am I
I assume they just run them later. And the biggest thing people complain about is that throws off the parents' morning. I understand, because they're going to work, and there may not be transportation for younger teens. Mm-hmm. And then it keeps the teachers there on a later, not quite second shift schedule, but a kind of one and a half shift schedule, particularly those who coach. So there are some downsides to it, but what fits the research about optimal learning is exactly what you were describing.
Okay. Well, Judy writes us this, Wes: aren't you forgetting kids in poverty situations and some single parent families? Many of these parents are trying to raise students when the parents are working two or three jobs, or students are in households that have had to contain two or three families in one Section 8 apartment because of the poor economy. A lot of that going on these days, too.
Well, yeah, I don't ever forget about those folks. And actually, we've added to their ranks in the last few years. And even some of the working poor and the working lower middle class who've seen their standard of living drop. So they're having to work more jobs and spending less time taking care of kids and keeping an eye on them. And I think we all know where that leads. So, then we turn around and say, well, we wish the schools would provide more services after school for those kids, Boys and Girls Club, all of those kind of things. And at the same time, we keep having elections about how to spend less money and not pay for anything. So I think these are all parallel tracks that are not going to run a very good direction in our society right now.
Well, how are you preparing your child for the transition from elementary to middle or middle to high school in just the next couple of weeks coming up here? Our number here again, 816-235-2888, and our email address is uptodate@kcur.org. Now, you have said that the peer group is not the most influential factor in as kids make the transition from middle to high school. A lot of people would assume that's precisely the case. So what is the biggest influence out there?
An involved parent, which kind of jumps off of our person's point about how difficult that is when you are fighting for survival. Mm-hmm. And that's true. Having time with kids is both necessary and a luxury of the middle class. And that is the if you do not have that influence on your kids, if you do not spend that time with them, and the time you spend being important time, not just, kind of not involved, just sitting there together watching TV, some involved discussion time, doing things together, being an influence in their life, then yes, kids do default to the social contacts that they have. Mm-hmm. And there are many kids who do not have that parental relationship who will find it in friends or, worse yet, gang-related kinds of situations. Mm-hmm. And so, sure, without that parent influence, you're going to end up with a peer influence. But with a parent, the parent can easily compete with that peer group if they just believe in themselves and their ability to be influential.
It can be tough sometimes.
Well, it's tough to believe in yourself.
Yes, at times.
It very much is, especially when kids have a far more blue color of hair than you do, or you know, more piercings than you do, or things that are really just superficial. These things are not really as important as the values they're picking up from you.
Now, you mentioned this before. You know, a lot of parents begin to doubt, you know, around this time of ninth grade that they have much influence at all. And as you said earlier this hour, it couldn't be more important to overcome your own sense of maybe you aren't that important anymore.
Yeah, you feel very helpless in this era. And you just have to ignore that and keep at it. One of the things that I have learned over the years as a therapist, and most kids are pretty interactive with me, but there are those who just kind of aren't very responsive. And recently, I had yet another example of one of them. And because the person isn't very responsive, I don't know what they're taking in. Mm-hmm. And I start to tell them this story that I think will be really helpful. And this individual stops you and says, "You've told me that one." And then tells me the story and why how it came out and what it means. And I thought you were like asleep. No, they're listening. They're interested. And they pick up a whole lot more than we realize.
That's interesting. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. You talk about the, you know, addressing drinking and drug use. And a little while ago, you said those conversations need to occur as kids get ready for middle school as opposed to kids getting ready for high school, because by the time they're in high school, they've already been exposed in middle school these days, which, again, will take a lot of parents aback a little bit.
Yep.
What about that?
Whenever I do middle school talks, and I'm actually going to do a district-wide talk in the Shawnee Mission District in October. I don't remember exactly what date it is, but out at their main office.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I go out and do middle school talks, the only people who are shocked and are the people who have not yet had an older child in high school, gotten through middle school. And the rest of them are like, "Oh, yeah, that's right." But the scared ones, the deer in the headlight ones, when I'm saying your children are going to be, you know, experimenting with sexuality and drugs in middle school, this has never occurred to them. And so if you can't—
I laugh only because I can appreciate so much. I've walked in the footsteps of what you're describing here.
They grow up suddenly, and we think, uh-oh, here comes high school. There'll be all these new things. Well, there'll be some greater intensity and opportunity in those situations because high school kids are that much more industrious than middle school kids in getting themselves into trouble. But they are already seeing those things, and don't fool yourself. It doesn't make any difference in which neighborhood you're in this bi-state area. Those kids have access to all sorts of trouble, and it's better to start that conversation before they get into middle school and keep having it all the way along.
And the conversation needs to be what?
Well, you have to express what your kind of two things. There's the soft side. You've got to express what your values are around those issues, what I call your external expectations. Here's what I believe in. And then you've got to hold people accountable to that. You need to decide up front what level of, for example, drug and alcohol abuse you're going to tolerate and how you're going to respond to it. You need to determine what level of tech use you're going to tolerate, what level of studying or non-studying you're going to tolerate.
And you need to specify all these things?
These are just conversations to have when you're throwing the baseball. You know, if you wish to talk about, I remember when I was in school and kind of wish I'd studied more, and you know, I kind of think about that now looking back, and that's kind of an opening discussion. You can do that. Whatever works to connect with the kid. Sexuality is a little trickier because you just do not get to control what other people do with their bodies. Mm-hmm. So all of your intervention there has to be soft side. It has to be, you know, I hope when you – this was one I do with kids I work with in therapy. I say, I hope when you decide to have sex, it will be in a way that you will be willing to tell your daughter about.
Hmm.
And if you give them that as a standard, that actually works better than you'll ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I've had kids come back or shoot me a text or whatever and say, "Well, you'd be proud of me. You know, I did have sex, and I will be able to tell my daughter about it." Now, of course, what the parent wants to do is be like, "Don't ever have sex."
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. It's okay to say, "I would like you to delay this because I don't think you're ready." That's true. I agree with it. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't have a tendency to stop anyone. And when you put a standard up there about making this an experience that you wouldn't fear sharing with someone you love, then they start thinking about it.
Interesting idea. Again, Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest. We're talking about these big transitions in life for our kids, elementary school to middle school to high school. If you want to offer us some advice on how you're managing your own son or daughter, we'd like to hear it. 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You talk about allowing age-appropriate independence and assertiveness for our kids. And that means what exactly? Because maybe the key here is understanding what on the green earth here is age-appropriate independence, Wes. Yeah.
Well, it's particularly, you know, for example, you would never let a 12-year-old or 13-year-old, I would hope, have a Facebook and Twitter that you are not a friend or follower on.
Mm-hmm.
So every year we add on to the 12 or 13-year-old, that question becomes reopened again. Now, I have a view, as we've discussed before, that nobody should post anything on Twitter or Facebook they don't want their mom to reading, whether they don't want their mom reading, whether it's my age or a 16-year-old.
Right.
But as kids get older, they get to make more and more of those decisions, driving independently, mm-hmm. being an example. So you have to encourage that. Much as our friend earlier discussed, the rock climbing, that's a kind of independence. You have to climb the rock yourself.
Right.
But even more importantly, encouraging age-appropriate assertiveness. And the research recently came out that said what I have always thought clinically, and that is kids who stand up to their parents are more likely to be stronger adults and stand up to problem people in their lives.
So there's a silver lining to this behavior,
yeah,
what you're saying.
That's
thank
what I'm
goodness.
Saying.
Yeah.
And it is clear that the meek children who are deferent to parental authority, as we all wish they would be, mm-hmm. are the ones who are more easily cowed by a difficult spouse later down the road or a boss who exploits them. Or friends who take advantage of.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense if you're in my chair. It's hard sometimes to see if you're the parent because, you know, we all love to deal with a difficult kid now, don't we?
Yeah. So again, if your son or daughter is you know, speaking back and challenging authority, that may not necessarily be a bad thing, which is going to come as very welcome news to a lot of folks who are hearing this right now.
Maybe, or maybe they will feel I've enabled bad behavior.
Yeah.
The thing is that we always have to remember the purpose of being a teenager. The mm-hmm. sole purpose of being a teenager is to differentiate from your parent, is mm-hmm. to do the teen thing, which is to become your own young adult eventually. And the purpose of parents is to keep you in a certain channel of values and behaviors that we think are safe and appropriate and healthy. And those two things have to be in conflict.
Have to be in conflict.
They have
right.
to be. There's a necessary, if you want to get big language going, it's a dialectical synthesis that creates a new individual out of that conflict.
Mm-hmm. What about teaching, you say teach responsibility for their belongings and yours. Mm-hmm. This is a big problem. You know, nowadays we discuss teen ethics, mm-hmm. You know, in your book very frequently. What about teaching responsibility for kids' belongings and putting away their clothes and all that good stuff?
Well, there's kind of two sides to that. One is to protect and to take care of your stuff because so many kids have expensive stuff now. And it just appears for a lot of kids, just appears, you know, out of nowhere because they don't have a personal financial investment in it.
Mm-hmm.
So part of learning to value something is to have kids earning the money, whether they're doing chores for you or a job or whatever, that purchases that expensive iPhone.
So paying kids for chores around the house, you don't have a huge problem with
it. I think that's a fine idea. You get a ton more work out of them, and you're going to pay for them anyhow, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you've paid a dollar or two for your kids over the years.
Yeah.
If you can link that to desired behaviors, whatever they may be, then they are doing what you and I do, earn a living by our good behavior and our work. Then they will have a connection to that value of that. The second thing
yeah.
is the ethical side of that is that kids, many kids today, culturally, not everyone, just culturally, struggle with the problem of stealing. And iPhones are at the top of the list of things they like to steal, and then they, you know, jailbreak them and switch them over to their accounts and so on.
Mm.
Parents need to strike that down harshly. Because that's a a kind of low-grade psychopathic behavior. It's not having respect for the social contract that we all have with each other. And so that's part of that teaching respect early on for other people's stuff.
You know, some of our listeners, Wes, might be wondering how a 50-year-old guy like yourself, you know, gets teens to talk to them about all these intimate things. How do you manage that?
That's interesting. It's so interesting how that goes. You have to have a lot of respect for kids. Whenever I'm on here, we're talking about what troublesome souls they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to know you love them. And as a therapist, that you think a lot of them and that you're interested in who they are and what they have to say, to put them on the team, to be a collaborator with them. And I think kids feel like we are in a dialogue, that I'm not just – I may be telling them, here's what I think you ought to do. But they – and I'll say to them, so you want to argue that point. And very often they'll kind of get a grin and say no. And they don't mean no, I'm not capable of arguing that point. They mean – you got me. That was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And really, kids like to have that relationship. Rarely does a kid come in who didn't want to come in and by the end of the hour still doesn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I have kids I've seen for years. On and off, they come in when they need to come in.
So you don't get kids very often that you simply can't crack.
It happens, certainly, because you don't always make a connection with everybody. But the majority of kids some kids come in and are not reluctant and ready to go. I've had kids look me up on the internet. They've read my column. They mm-hmm. ask to come in. I have other kids who refer their friends, which becomes kind of a problem at times.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get the ones that don't want to come. And usually after about an hour, they are ready to do this. They see it as a valuable thing because they have an adult who's really interested in talking with them like they're a serious person.
Mm.
And kids don't feel that way very much. So that's kind of the secret. One of the best things any kid ever said to me is a college girl. And she got ready to leave for home. And she said, you know, you've been a really good mom to me. And I knew what she meant. And I really appreciated it.
Yeah. Wes, always good to have you here. Thanks for the time.
Great to be here.
That's Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He owns Family Psychological Services in Lawrence. He appears on Thursday evening at the Kansas City Public Library, the branch on the Country Club Plaza. More information about that event and about Wes himself is all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Tomorrow on the program, we analyze the results of today's big elections, primary elections, and we'll make some predictions for November, too. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.